We're all ready. We'll get started. So welcome back to the public hearings of the Government Services Committee on its review of the draft bill, Real Estate Trading Act 2019. This afternoon, the committee will hear in-person submissions from members of the public. As indicated in our press release of September 4th, 2019, those wishing to present to the committee were required to pre-register via email by Thursday, September 12th. Following the deadline, there was one individual who indicated an intention to appear before the committee today, Mr. Ted Whalen. Welcome. The committee is also accepting written submissions from the public until Friday, September 20th. Those can be submitted via email to hoagovserviceescomm@gov.nl.ca. Mr. Whalen will have 10 minutes to present, followed by 5 minutes of questions from the committee. For the purposes of recording audio and Hansard, please state your name each time you speak. And on that note, I'll have the committee introduce themselves.
Allison Coffin, MHA, St. John's East, Kittyvitty.
Derek Bennett, MHA, Lewisburg, Twillingate.
Sarah Studley, MHA, Mount Sio.
Lyle O'Driscoll, Fairland.
Barry Patton, MHA, Conception Bay South.
Ted Whalen.
Okay, and I'm Pam Parsons, Chair and MHA for Harbor Grace, Portgrave. And Mr. Whalen, we're ready for you.
Thank you very much, first of all. As mentioned before, my name is Ted Whalen. I'm a realtor with Rural DuPage Vision and a member of the Newfoundland Association of Realtors. I've also been a mortgage broker with Dominion Lending Centers for the past 10 years, and previous to that held several roles with HSBC Finance, which was then HSBC Canada. And one of my roles as with HSBC was branch manager, where I worked closely with the National Regulatory and Compliance Departments for HSBC. My reason for being here today is to relate some of the concerns I have regarding some of the recommendations proposed to the Real Estate Trading Act. Specifically, one recommendation made which in regard to providing both mortgage broker services and real estate services to the same client on the same transaction. I feel that my experience in operating on both sides of this industry gives me a unique perspective and insight on potential conflict of interest or lack thereof. My concern with these recommendations were made with insufficient education and understanding of the mortgage broker industry. And the level of due diligence that the lenders and banks hold mortgage brokers to, as well as the high level of regulatory oversight that both banks and lenders face from the federal government. Our job as mortgage brokers is to know lenders' policies, products, and procedures. Then based on that knowledge, find the best product and interest rate for our clients. Our level of commitment, the relationship and fiduciary duty to our clients does not reduce at any point in time. All the underwriting, due diligence, support documentation review, and sign-off is done first by the mortgage broker, then by the bank or lender, and finally is subject to audit by various federal agencies, all of which report to the Minister of Finance. As a mortgage broker, our job starts with an application. It details include demographic information, employment information, credit history, net worth information, the source of our client's down payment. The application is submitted to a bank or mortgage lender for approval. It is the underwriting department that reviews the information and either approves or declines based on their own policies. Similar to a lawyer, we get to plead our case and provide evidence, but it is the bank's underwriter who gets to make the decision. Mortgage brokers do not have the ability to approve a mortgage application. Assuming that an application is approved, the next step is to provide the support documentation that the lender has requested. Most of the time, this includes a letter of employment, recent pay stub, tax returns, could be notice of assessments, T1 generals, maybe financial statements for a client's corporation. As mortgage brokers, we provide what it is the lender has requested, and they fully verify these documents. Again, we have no power to approve the actual application, and the bank reviews in detail all documents that we've submitted. The banks are then subject to supervision from the Financial Institution Supervisory Committee, the Bank of Canada, the Office of the Superintendent of Financial Institutions, the Financial Consumer Agency of Canada, and all these agencies report to the Minister of Finance. In other words, the mortgage industry is heavily regulated with the federal government. When it comes to this area of concern, this specific concern regarding one individual providing mortgage broker services and real estate services to the same client, my understanding is that both ServiceNL and NLAR assume that there is a potential for conflict of interest. ServiceNL's consultation questionnaire filed that question actually under the topic of conflict of interest, and both of NLR's proposed solutions still assume that there is a conflict of interest. The problem here is that there is no conflict of interest. I've spoken to dozens of realtors and mortgage brokers, and we've failed to conceive of any situation where the possibility of a conflict would exist, or where restricting the individual's ability to provide both mortgage and real estate services would be better served or better protect the general public. When one person is providing both real estate services and mortgage broker services to the same client on the same transaction, there still is only one client. My fiduciary duty to my client never diminishes. My duty to provide the best expert advice never diminishes. The duty to provide professional guidance never diminishes. And my responsibility and ability to do that as a realtor is not diminished by acting as a client's mortgage broker. I'm simply providing two different services with the utmost care to the same individual. In one role, I want to ensure that the client gets the best price when buying or selling their property. And in one role, I want to ensure that the client gets the best mortgage product and interest rate for their purchase. When buying a house, when building a house, your painter and your plasterer can be the same person. Chances are when you bought your car from a dealership, more likely than not, you got the vehicle financing from that same dealership. I'd go so far as to argue that being able to provide both services to my client empowers the client and leaves them better educated about the transaction, better protects them from financial difficulty, and that I fully understand their financial situation and I'm better able to advise them on their real estate transactions, helps them to avoid financial missteps by better understanding their mortgage and their market. I agree with Minister Gambit Walsh. Buying and selling a home is perhaps the largest transaction a person will make in their life, and it's imperative that we have legislation that protects consumers. If I'm a member of the general public, I want a realtor who's fully If I'm a member of the general public, I want a realtor who's fully versed on my financial situation and well-educated on what impact the financing of that purchase could have on the well-being of my family. I understand NLR has learned some painful lessons recently, and I agree with Mr. Sterling that we do need stronger accountability, and I agree with most of the proposed legislation. Unfortunately, this particular point of the proposed legislation is a great solution to a problem that simply doesn't exist. It unnecessarily reduces consumer choice and only helps to further mystify the process of buying or selling a home to the general public. In no way does it provide additional protection to Newfoundlanders and Labradorians looking to make what will likely be the largest and most significant investment. The ability to provide both real estate and mortgage broker services has been approved by all major banks and lenders in the broker channel. These institutions are not known for taking unnecessary risk, and as highlighted earlier, they are heavily regulated at the federal level. In closing, I understand that the government and NLR's intentions is to protect Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, but this is protecting them from something that doesn't exist. It will only provide unnecessary limitations to the level of guidance and expert advice that we as industry professionals can provide while reducing customer choice and further complicating an already intimidating and overwhelming process to the general public. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and now we'll move to our committee. Are there any questions?
Allison Coffin. A couple of quick questions here. I completely understand where you're coming from, and I understand the separation of the two services. I'm trying to get my head around now why the association would make a slightly different recommendation. So I guess they're concerned about manipulation of the process if you are involved in both, and I understand the regulations around mortgages. But I guess perhaps a couple of things you touched on were, what would be the payments from both services? Would be those both be a percentage of the value of the mortgage and or the sale of the house?
Ted Whelan, yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then, so the relationship between the mortgage and the house, I guess, would be, and I'm not saying you do this, but is there any incentive for a mortgage broker, knowing the finances of individuals, to maybe manipulate, like if I know that you can afford a house that's $500,000 versus you're only looking at something that's $300,000, and this would still perhaps happen if you weren't a broker. If you were a broker, would there be any potential for manipulation, saying, well, I know you can afford $500,000, so let's go look at $500,000 houses, and would there be any incentive on the part of an individual in this situation to do that type of thing? Or I guess then the secondary question would be, what possibilities exist for a manipulation within that? Not saying that you do that. We're just being prudent about it.
Ted Whalen. So when the banks look at you for approval, they basically look at two things. They look at your ability to pay and your willingness to pay.
Yes.
Your willingness to pay is your credit score, how you paid things in the past. That's of your own control.
Yes.
Your ability to pay is just straight math. It's two ratios they look at, your gross debt-to-service ratio and your total debt-to-service ratio. Those you can't manipulate. You have a certain level of debt. You have a certain level of income. The banks will allow 42% of your gross income to go towards those, covering off those debts, and that's it.
Yep.
So I'd like to be able to manipulate math sometimes, but unfortunately math is math.
Yeah.
When it comes to what the banks will usually approve a client for, I find myself more often than not talking them back from what the client will do, the bank will oftentimes let you go a little further than maybe you should. Mm-hmm. And if you're depending on things that are outside the application, if you're a young couple and you're planning on more kids in the future, those are going to be life-changing events that the bank doesn't look at and doesn't understand. Yeah. So they may say, yeah, we'll approve it for $500, but my conversation with my client is going to be, okay, well, what's your plan for the future? Are you planning more kids? Are you taking another job? What's going to be those factors that are going to apply later? Maybe we should look at 420. Maybe we should look at 380 and kind of roll it back from there. Because, again, these are my duty to my client is not just one transaction out the door. In this industry, it's your repeat clientele that pays the bill. So you want to make sure you have a long-lasting relationship with these mm-hmm. people.
Okay, that's great. Can I have one more question?
Sure.
How many people are in the same situation as you where they have both these dual roles or dual abilities? Are there many?
Ted Whalen. I think the answer is also Ted Whalen. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one. There's a handful around, I think, who have done it in the past. There's a gentleman in the Carbonear area, actually, who does both, but is finding the mortgage side of it more and more difficult. My concern with stuff like that is that I do a fair bit of business in the Harbor Grace area as well, and there's not a lot of mortgage brokers out there, so people don't have a lot of choice. So now if I've got somebody who I've developed a relationship with over the years, they want me to list their house or help them with the purchase of their house, now I can't help them on what I've done best my entire career and what they trust me and why they've contacted me to begin with.
Right.
So, no, I don't think it's a big problem. I'm pretty sure I'm the only person who truly does it. There's a few other realtors who are in and out of it, I think. I mentioned Dallas Stacey and Carbonear. I think there is an individual with a real estate broker license who is also a mortgage broker, but I don't think he does any sales on the real estate side.
Okay. Can I have one more? Allison Coffin. Okay. I think it sounds to me as if the recommendations that came out of the Volume 1 was based on best practices, and it doesn't seem to reflect what you're saying is the situation here. Is there a way that we can perhaps adapt maybe the regulation or what we're talking about in the legislation? Do you see a way as where we can, say, eliminate any potential for conflict of interest? Because up front you will mm-hmm. say, I can do this and do this, instead of saying, I can do this and my wife or child or good friend can do this other thing. So even just disclosure would address that. Do you think that would be a reasonable thing? So maybe some of the mechanisms like that they've proposed where you can't have a conflict of interest, like you can't represent both buyer and seller, maybe. Right. There is another fix around this that would not be unnecessarily punitive to you and others in your situation.
Ted Whalen. Yes, that's correct. I keep drawing parallels from the dual agency situation on the real estate side.
Right.
There is actually a disclosure designed just for that purpose.
Right.
I guess it's just to both sides sign saying that you know that your agent is representing both the purchaser and the seller in any given situation. I think something like that could set everybody's mind at ease a little bit.
Right.
Again, I don't think this is a huge problem. I'm pretty sure I'm the only person doing it.
Right.
So yeah, I'm open to other suggestions from NLR
right.
as well.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Barry Patton. So Ted, you say you don't know of any more people at the same thing you're doing. Is that what you're saying? You the only person in this boat, or?
Ted Whalen, yes, I believe I am. I know there was another real estate agent who was doing this, but I think his daughter now runs his mortgage business, and I don't think he has any direct ties to it. There's some other brokers who I think own brokerage franchises, but I think I'm the only dual agent, we'll say.
Interesting. No, I mean, I'm listening, I mean, and there's no doubt, I mean, At face value, I mean, I take your word, and I guess it's in your case, and I have no doubt, no reason not to believe you, and I mean, you're above board, but some of this legislation is preventative because not everyone will be carry the same principle. It won't be as principled as like everything, I guess, right? So, to Alison's point, during these consultations and that, it is best practices, and there was feedback from both. You know, with the public consultations and whatnot. So obviously, there was a concern raised by one group or another to make this dual agent issue. Someone made this an issue for it to be in this legislation. So I guess that's where I'm kind of my mind. I'm thinking, there's not many of you doing it. Then why is this an issue? But obviously, it's an issue because it's in the legislation. So if you know where I'm trying to.
Yeah.
It seems a bit muddy to me, but I don't know if you can clarify it.
Ted Whalen. My understanding is that this issue did come up during the public consultations. I'm happy to say that they were between January 22nd and February 8th of 2018, and I got my license in May of 2018, so it wouldn't be directly tied to myself. but my theory is that the questionnaire that was given out, the question was a little leading, in my opinion. I don't have the actual wording for the question, but I have the description of the question from ServiceNL, and it says something to the effect of, when asked if customers were being harmed by practices where there was a potential for conflict of interest, 62% of people responded yes. If there's a potential for conflict of interest, I think the answer should have been 100% of people say yes. No one wants to put themselves in some sort of conflict of interest. So I have talked to NLR a little bit about this as well, but again, because I came along so late in the process, the public consultations had already happened. I didn't have much of a voice at that point in time to kind of shoot holes in those theories. So really, I don't know where it came from, but yeah, it's been floating around there a little bit.
Interesting. Okay, Ms. Studley.
Hi, Sarah Studley. Just curious, do you also sell those customers home insurance, or do you offer to be their insurance broker as well?
Ted Whalen, no.
No, okay. In a former life of mine, I worked very closely with insurance and mortgage broker deals, actually. And so I know, I guess I just have a huge appreciation for how legally complex the Canadian financial services industry is. Like you have the Bank Act and these big, monstrous, really, I guess, strong pieces of legislation that is like this huge financial services framework. So I guess I'm just not sure that we can have an educated discussion on this, but I take your point. It must be very frustrating for yourself, as a mortgage broker and a real estate agent, where this legislation is going to change the amount of money you have in your pocket at the end of the year and it's going to change your business. I guess we'll have to take it away, but anyway, thank you very much. But I do have a strong appreciation for how complex the legislation is around some of this, like federally and provincially. It's just a very complex thing, but thank you.
Ted Whalen. Yeah, I understand the complexity of it, certainly. My concern is that because it came along so late in the process that I won't be able to change the direction of the ship, but I do feel like not just for my own personal benefit, but for the benefit of Newfoundland Labradorians who are looking to purchase. Again, I talked about the situation in Harbor Grace where there's not a lot of choice in the way of mortgage brokers, so we're reducing that. And when it comes to the fact that I'm also a realtor, I still fall under what Mr. Sterling talked about earlier, the code of ethics that will still apply, whether I'm a real estate or a mortgage broker. I keep drawing parallels between what I do and dual agency. The difference with the two and how I feel that sort of establishes the standard of care. If dual agency is okay, why isn't this? Dual agency where I can represent two people in, and as NLR says in their training manual, an impossible situation where you're representing both a buyer and a seller in a fiduciary duty, how can you represent both of them when they have opposing positions on a topic? For what I do as a mortgage broker and a real estate agent, there is no opposing views. It's one client. I don't have to worry about anyone else's issues. I want to get my client the best purchase price for the property and the best mortgage interest rate for their purchase.
Mr. O'Driscoll first, and then...
Yeah, Loyola O'Driscoll. No, I appreciate it. As I was a car salesman myself, and we would represent the customer and do the financing as well. So I know building a trust relationship is what it's all about, and that will get your referrals, and I get your side of that story for sure. So certainly wish you good luck with it.
Appreciate that.
Derek Bennett, Ted, you mentioned that you had a couple of those, or a few meetings, and I know you came in after a lot of this consultation process was done. You said you did have some meetings with NLR. Are they open to the idea, or what was the conversation or feedback back and forth there? Is it something they feel that we can work together with to be able to accommodate, or are they steadfast, no, this is something that they feel would be negative towards the legislation?
Ted Whelan. So when I came on, I think at the... it had already hit, I think, the first and maybe second reading in the House at that point in time. And I contacted my MHA and the Minister for Service NL at the time. I didn't contact NLAR at that time because the recommendations had already been submitted. Since the bill died on the floor after the last sitting, I think this last Thursday was the first notification that we knew there was going to be another public hearing. So I did reach out to NLAR earlier this week and was unable to have a real good conversation with them. I did sort of ambush Bill Sterling in the lobby here earlier this morning, and we had a quick conversation. And and nothing against Mr. Sterling. I think he's great, and his leadership has been great for our association. But the lack of education is certainly there. He's not a mortgage broker. He doesn't understand that side of the business and what we do and the oversight that we go through. So I think he'd be willing to talk about some solutions for sure. And I think that, as Allison mentioned earlier, the disclosure might be a great idea. Because again, if it takes for a dual agency situation to be okay and the standard of care to be met is that disclosure needs to be signed, then I feel like the risk for any sort of conflict of interest is so much less in what I do that disclosure statement should be more than enough. So again, it's a suggestion we could certainly make.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate where you're coming from, and I think it's something we definitely can take back for review.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Patton.
Barry Patton, yeah, Ted. I want to thank you as well. It's kind of put a different perspective to what I think we had as a committee, and this is my second go about because I was on the previous committee prior to the election in May. So I've been twice. I went to the same presentation. But it's different. So one question, you probably already said it. Services you provide is the mortgage to the buyer. You're providing the mortgage services and realty, like selling a home. So what about inspection? What about like all those other surveys, like all those other added features? Do you have any input into that to the buyer? If I go to deal with you to get a house, are you going to be the one-stop shop for everything, or is it just the financing and the actual sale?
Ted Whelan. So I thought about going back to school and get my law license, but no. It's just
solid's missing.
Real estate and mortgage broker is it. When it comes to the home inspection, appraisals, all that stuff, we can make recommendations to professionals who we value in the industry professionals. But no, that's not something we do. No.
Not saying you do it, but you'd offer a suggestion, like Allison Coffin does great surveys. You know what I mean? Like referrals. Like, I mean, some way of thinking. I mean, if you wanted to try to minimize being directing or I don't know, just keeping everything, you could offer a list of inspectors, a list of reputable surveys as a so save me or anyone from going to the Yellow Pages or going online or whatever you want to do, right? I mean, mostly online now, but of course, but just the point of, you know, not being leading into your own empire. And I think that's something that I know has been discussed. I know last time around it was discussed, the one-stop shopping, and it's kind of was a little bit alluded to less this time than it was last time, actually, about one, you know, realtor dealing with everything. And that, I think, if my memory serves me right, that came up a lot in our first go up in April when we had the committee meetings on it, and it was a lot of discussion about the realtor controlling everything. And maybe that's where this all evolved into where we're to today. Maybe it was more in the department side, right, even as much as more so than Endler. So, but no, I do appreciate you. It gives me a different perspective too. Yeah, and I get where you're coming from. I really do. Thanks.
So Ted Whelan, I get what you're saying, but referring home inspectors and appraisers and whatnot, and the best practice that I think that Endler has kind of suggested is that you do give a list. The realities of the situation is that this is a small problem. So there's not a lot of people out there who do these jobs. And I have been around for a while, and you get to know who's good at their job and who's not so good at your job. So while it's, you know, you could paint this as, you know, I want to keep it to my group of people, but it really, those group of people, there's a high level of service that I expect from those people. So, yeah, I do make one or two recommendations on a home inspector, but I've used them multiple occasions. Same thing with lawyers, so that I know that they can deliver a level of service and guidance to, especially first home buyers, that's a decent for sure.
Thank you. Any further questions from our committee? Okay, Mr. Lee.
So neither, I guess, the real estate association that your company that you're associated with, or the mortgage broker association, neither of them have concerns that you're doing both, or they're all fully aware and I guess okay with that?
Ted Whelan, yes, that's correct. My real estate brokerage, I had a lengthy conversation with him before I started. He had no issue with it. Where the problem would have or could have lied is with the lenders. So I work for an independent brokerage, Dominion Lending Centers, but the lenders that we use, I think there's 90 of them across the country. We don't use that many, but you know, most of the big banks are there as well. If they don't want to use you because you're a realtor, then obviously you're not going to do a whole lot of business because you don't have many lenders to use. So no, they've all approved it. There's a load of people in Ontario who do this. The only stipulation is most want you to disclose up front when you submit the application to the lender that you will be acting as both the realtor and the mortgage broker.
Thank you.
And Mr.
Patton. Triggered one question when you come back that time, Ted. Mm-hmm. How many other provinces allow what you do? You said Ontario. So do you know how many other provinces across Canada allow the same thing you're to dual representatives?
Ted Whelan. So it's a little tougher to find out than I thought it was going to be. I do know that Ontario, and this comes from most of the lenders that I used when I first started, asking them, are other people across the country doing this? And my one of the lenders that I use most said, "Oh yeah, we've got a dozen in Ontario for sure. I know there's a couple in BC and Ontario, BC and Alberta. I don't know what the situation is with the rest of Atlantic Canada. The problem we have on the mortgage broker side is that we're not a huge industry, and then especially in Atlantic Canada, we get even smaller and smaller. So right now we're members of the MBAC, the Canadian Mortgage Brokers Association, but then we don't even get a provincial section of that. We get the Atlantic Canadian section of that. So out of those four provinces, we then have a one-person director here in Newfoundland. So what their stance is, I don't know. But yeah, again, because there's not a whole lot of us out there, you got to kick up an awful stink to get someone to give you an answer.
Thanks.
Derek Bennett. So Ted, how long did you say you've been practicing both as a realtor and a broker? What you started in May 2018?
Yes, May 2018. Yep, May 4th.
Okay. Any further questions? Anything else you'd like to add?
No. Thank you.
Okay. Well, on that note, I thank you for coming. And, of course, thanks to our committee. Thank you.